In the past decade, transgender activists and allies have made great strides in social and legal recognition as well as inclusion. Nearly 10 years after the publication of her work, Transgender History, Professor Susan Stryker has now come out with a second edition of that book, almost an entirely new volume with updates throughout and a new chapter. Dr. Susan Stryker is Associate Professor of Gender and Women's Studies as well as Director of the Institute for LGBT Studies at the University of Arizona, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It is a great pleasure to have you on the program. Give us a sense, I know this is a revised edition, of how you came to tell this history, a history that is changing all the time, of course.
Well, you know, it's just something that's near and dear to my heart. I'm, trained as an academic historian. I did my PhD at Berkeley in U.S. history, and I'm transgender. So, you know, it was just sort of two great tastes that taste great together, in my opinion. Steel Press came to me a number of years ago and asked if I would develop the book for a series of short introductory textbooks that they were developing on, you know, topics of current interest. And there's just been enough interest in the title that I wrote back then and, you know, so much going on with transgender issues culture-wide that we all just decided it was time for a revised and expanded second edition. The decade between sort of 2008 and 2018, there was just a major sort of upsurge in visibility and attention to transgender issues. There were lots of changes in law and policy. And, of course, it's now become one of the, you know, real hot spots in the sort of national culture wars. So there was a lot to add in a new chapter and, you know, not a lot of history to revise, but the first chapter of the original book was all about sort of, you know, terms and vocabulary and concepts. And it was really shocking to me how much just the lingo has shifted in the past decade. The book sounded really antiquated and out of date and talking about sort of terms and concepts. So that's been revised.
So when it comes to those terms and concepts, we as a culture and a society are more aware, although it's my sense that perhaps that isn't saying a whole lot.
Right, yeah, there was sort of nowhere to go but up in some ways. It is sort of remarkable to me how much this has become a topic of conversation. I mean, as a trans person, of course, it's something that I have dealt with and been aware of my entire life. You know, I'm in my later 50s at this point. It's like I, you know, had transgender feelings as a small child. I've always kind of had my, you know, antenna up about these issues. So it's not new to me, but it's like it's remarkable how much change there's been on this topic. And, well, you know, over the course of about 25 years, we've seen a huge uptick. And then the last, you know, 10 years in particular, it's just been on the fast track.
You have a wonderful chapter in the book that is called The Tipping Point with a question mark. Have you reached that tipping point yet?
You know, the title of that chapter came from the, you know, I think many people will be familiar with the Time magazine cover that had the actress Laverne Cox on the cover, and it said, you know, is America at a transgender tipping point? And, you know, I think the thought at that time, that was in 2014, was that a kind of critical mass had been reached on sort of transgender visibility and, you know, civil rights issues, and that it was kind of all going to be downhill from that point, you know, that trans people were just sort of, you know, rolling downhill towards, you know, full citizenship and equality and acceptance. And, you know, I think that was a premature, you know, sentiment. But I do think the idea of a tipping point is interesting. You know, like if you don't think of it as like an inflection point where everything gets easier after that, but of like a fulcrum where things can tip backwards and forwards like a teeter totter, because I definitely think there has been sort of a, you know, pushback. You know, we had sort of the two steps forward. We're definitely having a one step back moment right now with the current federal administration. Lots of change on the social and cultural front, but some real rollbacks at the legislative and, you know, policy level. So anyway, I think the idea of a tipping point, if we think of it as like a back and forth moment that we're in, is still actually a very good metaphor for where we are.
Let me ask about, because in that chapter you write about mass media representation. What do you make of that representation and the opportunity that it gives to audiences to understand transgender history and issues, and also probably the problems that develop along with it?
Now, you know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, that most representations of trans people in mass media until quite recently have been very stereotypical and often very negative, you know, that we're the butt of jokes, or we're the, you know, deranged serial killers, or we're the, you know, pathetic, tragic people who have this mysterious malady. And, you know, it just has, you know, I don't think it's served us well as, you know, trans people to, you know, the kinds of media representation that we have had. And it's just really remarkable that, you know, nowadays you're getting more representation of trans people as, you know, just plain folks. You know, you've got stories of trans people who are doing things besides changing gender. You know, it used to be the only images you'd see of, you know, gay people in the media was the coming out story. Until quite recently, the only, you know, real representation of, you know, trans people you would see is like, oh, they're people who change gender, and you're just going to hear the transition story. But, you know, with shows like Transparent and Sense8 and I Am Jazz, and, you know, even, you know, the Caitlyn Jenner reality TV show, like, you're getting more and more sense of trans people as, you know, people who have full lives, who are just, you know, people you might, you know, run into at the corner store, or, you know, people that you work with or that your kids go to school with. So, yeah, I think it's been a very positive change in the representation of trans people. You know, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that gender as a social system is changing. You know, I mean, I think most people don't think of gender as being like language or kinship, you know, but it's like a social structure or social system that we live within, you know, where we all sort of learn what our bodies mean to ourselves, what they mean to other people. You know, we have sort of cultural ideas about what gender means, and that cultural system is really shifting. You know, it's like we have, you know, I sort of think of it as like gender climate change. You know, that something about the way we understand gender is really shifting at a, you know, broad, deep, pervasive level. And that younger people today, I think, have a very different sense of how it's permissible or acceptable or desirable to express their gender. And that, you know, it's just a very kind of, you know, current, timely topic that I think can be quite fascinating, that older people are often quite fascinated with how younger people are, you know, doing gender these days. And that, you know, I just think it's one of those things where societal mores are shifting in a way that we don't quite have a handle on, and that it's just going to be a very sort of gradual shift in how trans people are perceived. And that, you know, it's just because of the pervasiveness and depth of the shifts around these ideas of gender, it becomes something that there's a lot of cultural fascination about, and we're seeing that reflected in mass media.
Because, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are Associate Professor of Gender and Women's Studies, as well as the Director of the Institute for LGBT Studies at the University of Arizona. You talk in the book about academia and how transgender studies have attained this unprecedented level of support and legitimacy by the academy. Talk a little bit about the importance of that and how you see that growing.
Yeah, I work in the sort of the humanities and in cultural studies. You know, I'm not a social scientist or a, you know, don't do the hard sciences. You know, I study culture and, you know, cultural and historical processes. And that in my part of the academy, you know, there are a number of, you know, sort of subfields that have developed that come out of social movements. I mean, things like, you know, women's and gender studies, you know, comes out of the feminist movement, and, you know, ethnic studies, you know, comes out of the sort of like, you know, ethnic pride movements of the 1960s and 70s. end that. Or disability studies comes out of disability rights activism. And what's interesting to me about these kinds of fields is that there's knowledge that people have about the way the world is organized that they develop because of the way that they're, you know, minoritized, or the way that they're, you know, socially marginalized, you know, based on their own bodies, you know, whether it's by race, whether it's by sex, whether it's by ability. And just that living your body in the world in a particular way becomes a way of developing a critique of society. And so that it's interesting when those kinds of like experiential and body-based ways of knowing the world enter the academy and get sort of hooked up with more traditional and formal kinds of scholarship. What's been happening is that transgender studies has been developing as one of these kinds of academic subfields where what trans people know about the way that gender works in the world, just because of how we live our bodies, is becoming something that other people see as a valuable perspective on the world. And so it's like by looking at the world from, you know, the sort of the slightly askew stance of the person who is, you know, a gender minority, becomes a way that can help produce socially, intellectually, politically useful knowledge. Transgender studies, you know, has really been developing for more than 25 years at this point. And some very early work in the field was done in the early 90s. And now, you know, as you mentioned, it's like there are people who get hired in universities to teach this topic. There's an academic, a peer-reviewed academic journal from a prestigious university press. TSG is published by Duke University Press. You know, it's something people can get PhDs in. It's, you know, topics that students are interested in learning about, and therefore you have to hire people who can teach on this. So it's just been kind of remarkable to me that in a relatively short period of time, in about 25 years, it's gone from like zero to, you know, 100 miles an hour.
And why a book like this is so important, because it puts it all into context and gives you the history before you started going 100 miles an hour.
Right. So, yeah, this book, Transgender History, The Roots of Today's Revolution, really is intended as a kind of introductory book on the topic. It's designed to be a pretty easy read. It doesn't, you know, go off into a bunch of incomprehensible posts. Structuralist theory, gobbledygook, you know, it's not about, you know, postmodern gender. It's, you know, really a pretty straightforward narrative of how it is that, you know, we can see the visibility of people we would call trans now in U.S. history. You know, wherever you want to look, you can find the trace of transgender people being present there. But it really focuses on the post-World War II social movements. When people started becoming more politically active to challenge and contest the kinds of discrimination or prejudice that they faced for being transgender, it looks at the development of sort of the medicalization of transgender identities and, you know, the development of sex reassignment programs based in universities. It looks at social justice activism, the relationship of transgender movements to gay and feminist movements. It looks at sort of the intersectionality of identity, like the importance of always thinking about race and class and ability, as well as gender identity and expression. And it, you know, and it documents the really remarkable upsurge in attention to trans issues over the past decade. So if anybody's looking for a kind of a quick, you know, one-stop shopping experience on sort of getting a handle on sort of where this trans thing has come from in our culture, that's the audience that this book is intending to serve.
The name of the book is Transgender History, The Roots of Today's Revolution. It is the second edition. Susan Stryker is Associate Professor of Gender and Women's Studies, as well as Director of the Institute for LGBT Studies at the University of Arizona. Susan, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure having you on our program.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Transgender History, The Roots of Today's Revolution. The book is published by DeCapo Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.